Thank you. Just to give you a few moments of background on where we come from. By the way, West Chicago is about 40 miles straight west of downtown Chicago. We're nice and strategically placed in a place that's close to Chicago, yet far enough away to be helpful in case of massive disaster. We've been around since 1997, about 8.5 years now, and our primary focus has been historically working large-scale, high-performance, high-reliability communication systems, and primarily for NASA and the Department of Defense. We also had the opportunity, and it was nice to see Neil Helm this morning, worked very closely with some of the GWU folks in the early 90s on the Advanced Communications Technology Satellite Program with NASA Glenn Research Center in Cleveland. And that was a lot of, that program was what generated a lot of our intellectual horsepower relative to high-performance satellite and terrestrial networks and interoperability. And since then, we've gotten into a lot of other things involving especially systems that move around as they're being used, land mobile vehicles, spacecraft, aircraft, and ships at sea. So we got involved in the Homeland Security arena almost by accident. And it's hard to have a Homeland Security conversation about communication systems without talking a little bit about 9/11. And I'll talk a little bit more about 9/11 in a few minutes. But that was really what focused my company on looking at Homeland Security was the 2 days after that event. I happened to be at the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory. There were a couple of references to a Navy system, and I was part of the four-person team that put together the original response from the Naval Research Laboratory for New York City, that's now called Infralinx, and so we kind of got drawn into that more or less by accident or by invitation. And historically, our focus has been, again, on human spaceflight communication systems and DoD types of applications. We've got small focus on aviation, primarily in precision navigation systems, and then more recently in Homeland Security. And all of these activities that we're involved in are sharing the same core types of capabilities that we as a company have, and that's high reliability, high availability, high security communication systems, pretty much trying to connect people and applications wherever and whenever they need to connect. So as a backdrop, there were two events that I think kind of focus our conversations lately. One was Hurricane Katrina. I think of Katrina as a perfect storm. And the primary reason for that is that it didn't just take away the communications, but it took away communications and power. And at any time you have that type of coupling with the physical devastation making traversing the roadways and the waterways so difficult, all of a sudden the logistics become monumentally difficult. And so this was the most recent, obviously, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. And then New York City and Washington, D.C., 9/11, you know, it was interesting. The physical devastation in New York City wasn't really that substantial when you think about wars and hurricanes and floods and things like that. But one of the issues that was really incredible was the fact that when you think about the communication system and all of the large central office switching systems, they're all designed to basically maintain a statistically normal load of maybe 30% of the circuits that are connected to that system at one time might be active, or maybe even less than that. And one of the issues that came up loud and clear in 9/11 was if you knew anybody in New York City or Washington, D.C., chances are you probably called them. And if you were someone who happened to be in New York City, you were calling everyone you knew to check in. And the problem was that the systems weren't designed for that kind of load. So one of the things that really got us crystallized on voice communication was the call from FEMA that said, we're picking up the telephone at our Ground Zero command post, and we can't get a dial tone. The reason was because the switches didn't have any more capacity. So even if you had a wire, chances were that you were going to have to try a few times before you got a dial tone. Likewise with the cellular system, one of the things that was an interesting quote from Mayor Daley from Chicago about 4 or 5 months ago. There was an interview with him, and they asked if you could have anything that you wanted in your bag of tools relative to emergency response, what would it be? And he said, guaranteed communications. And you know, he said, go out to Grant Park. You see the same thing on the National Mall. Anytime you get a million people in the same place, you're going to have a tough time getting a cell phone call through, too. So there's a real issue with guaranteed communication. And one of the other things, and I always think about this when there's a major news event that's not an emergency, you know, imagine trying to have a national incident response the day that Michael Jackson got arraigned. Well, why is that a big deal? Well, because all of the occasional used satellite capacity in the whole country was used up by the media. And it wasn't just U.S. media, it was international media. So this is one of the other issues that comes to play is that if you're banking on occasional use satellite capacity for your incident response, it may not be something that you want to bank on real seriously, because if you happen to have your emergency the day that Michael Jackson got arraigned or O.J. Simpson's driving down the highway or whatever, it's going to be tough for you to get on the air. So our activities today are kind of focused on two different scales of communication systems that can be deployed in response to disasters or incidents. One is large-scale incident management with a system that we called Unified Command. Our partner in developing this is the Office of Emergency Management and Communications in the City of Chicago. That's really kind of helped to shape our thinking, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But basically making it possible to project the power and the infrastructure and the applications of a major 911 facility anywhere in the country using dedicated high-performance satellite links. And then I appreciated the reference in the Red Cross briefing to something that I've been working with now for about 2 years, is a family of inflatable satellite antennas that allow us to take a very capable KU-band or C-band ground system and literally fit it into a backpack. And that makes it possible to put a whole bunch of systems in the trunk of a car or, you know, check it on an airplane and take it with you, which we've done. We've done about 40 demonstrations in the last year and a half with this system. And I believe the most recent one was we were up on Capitol Hill at the Dirksen Building and had an opportunity to show that along with a number of other organizations from D.C. and around the country. Sorry, that was a Rayburn Building. Let me start with the Unified Command, and I'll try to go rapidly. I know we're going to be kind of short on time. During the few months immediately following the 9/11 events, we started up a dialogue with the Office of Emergency Management and Communications, I'll just call them the OEMC, in the city of Chicago. And they were very interested in trying to figure out, well, what does all this mean to us, and how can we put together a system that might make it possible to alleviate some of the issues that we saw with that event. And it was interesting. Right now, we've been involved with that dialogue for a little more than 3 years. We just celebrated the 4th anniversary of 9/11, and we're now in the process of actually mechanizing that relationship into a project. But there were some other events that shaped our thinking, and these are some of the Chicago events and other that are national. But the Chicago River flood in 1992, anybody remember that? Pile drivers drive a pile through the Chicago River, and that emptied into the sub-basements of all the major buildings, and the water table underneath the city of Chicago came up to the level of Lake Michigan in every major building. It was a multi-billion dollar catastrophe, took a lot of power, a lot of communications off the air, and there was absolutely no evidence on the surface that anything had happened. Chicago OEMC, this is national news, power outage in July of 2004. The primary power to the building failed, secondary power failed, 911 calls didn't go through for 90 minutes, ended up taking 911 calls at the backup center for the next 2 weeks as they figured out what was the reason for the primary and the secondary systems to fail. Numerous high-rise building fires. As a matter of fact, this is going to be our final test for our system. So we're going to recreate the LaSalle Bank fire and roll the 100 pieces of fire apparatus and police hardware that were involved with that response in December of 2004. That was exactly a year ago. The London subway bombings, the Italy bombings, 9/11, New York City and Washington, D.C., and then numerous hurricanes, most recently Katrina. So a lot of things that we study, not just one event. The result is a system I'm not going to go through all these capabilities because there's a lot here, and hopefully you can refer back to these later, but it's a large self-propelled truck with its own network and its own satellite link and a hub that's connected to the City of Chicago network. And this vehicle, I liken it to a ball of clay. We can take this vehicle and wrap it around, and anybody who's in emergency services knows that every event's a little different, and the toolbox that you want to bring to each successive event is a little bit different. And I really was happy to hear the reference to training. One of the things that we're going to do with this vehicle is we're going to take it to parades. We're going to take it to the air show. We're going to take it everywhere. And the key is use it, use it, use it, use it. If the only time you ever use this vehicle is when you've got a major scale incident going on and you're trying to figure out, what's that button do? How do I turn this screen on? It's going to be a big problem. And so operational op-tempo is a very important thing. So we're creating with the City of Chicago a cadre of highly trained people who will basically manage this ball of clay, and they will mold it to meet the needs of each incident as it comes along. So that's going to be, I think, a very interesting and exciting path for us as this system comes along. We'll be hopefully rolling the system out in midsummer of 2006. There's a little bit, like I said, a little bit of everything on board. All of it state-of-the-art, all of it is industry standard-based. There are very, very few, if any, proprietary systems. A couple things to point out. One of the things that we wanted to be able to provide in the context of shadow government and major scale disaster response is the ability for senior officials to be able to go on the air nationally and broadcast. So one of the things that's part of this system is a CNN quality broadcast origination suite for standard definition video. A number of other capabilities. Again, we can talk if anybody has any particular questions offline. One other key thing, more than 100 channels of voice being able to deliver into the vehicle. The thought is, if this truck ends up butting up against a school or a factory and being able to replicate the 911 facility in a different place, we have also worked out with SBC Communications the ability to take 911 calls in that vehicle and dispatch from the vehicle. So a couple other things that we want to do in the future. These are for our extra credit work, ability to receive and relay video signals from helicopters. Coordinating aircraft and controlling aircraft operating in the vicinity of the vehicle. The vehicle will have aircraft and marine radios. Chicago has a waterfront too, so we're concerned about the marine activities. Ability to coordinate with another city to provide a coordinated response. So if something happened to our satellite hub, we want to be able to utilize another city's infrastructure to take those services and deliver those to the vehicle. Likewise, the ability to provide services to another city in a coordinated response. And now, the first thing that relies on absolutely 100% is all of our interfaces have to be standards-based. Otherwise, what we're going to be doing is forcing somebody else into our architecture, and we didn't want to be in that position. So, so those are a couple of thoughts on the future. The other thing that we're doing, hopefully as a phase two on this project, is building out a pair of command vehicles. The command vehicles will be essentially large conference rooms, but they will also have large pneumatic masts, and we'll be able to link the command vehicles and the communications vehicle with a wireless link and also with a wired umbilical. And that gives us the ability to extend the power of the communications truck into a second vehicle. And those vehicles can be separated by a couple miles, so we can actually change the geometry of the response based on what the specific requirements are of that event. This is the original InfraLinks. It was kind of the inspiration for what we're doing with Unified Command. And this is a Freightliner chassis with a 20-foot box on the back, very similar to what we're going to be doing with the City of Chicago. Tactical response, just briefly. It was referenced earlier. We've been working now for about 2 years with a partner company of ours called GATR Technologies out of Huntsville, Alabama. And GATR is the inventor of these inflatable antennas. In the foreground is a 2.5-meter antenna. In the background behind the tent is a 5-meter inflatable antenna. And then over to the left is an airship. I love this picture because everything in the picture is inflatable. But the key here is that 2.5-meter antenna in the foreground. It's a Ku band transceiver, and that antenna, all by itself, just the antenna weighs about 14 pounds. The entire ground system for that antenna fits into a backpack, a U.S. Forces Special Forces backpack, and weighs about 72 pounds. And of course, whatever electronics you want to couple along with that is the capability of the system that you have available. This is Wool Market, Mississippi. This is the second picture of Wool Market. This is just outside of Biloxi. We went there as a volunteer effort with the American Red Cross. And we had internet access. This was also using Pan AmSat's iDirect network. This is a separate iDirect network from the Red Cross. This was on Horizons 1. And we had 1 megabit up, 2 megabits down. And you can see on the top of the antenna, it's very difficult to see this. See if I can point it out here. That's the amplifier package and the block up converter and the low noise block down converter package. That's about a 3-watt system. And what we found with this antenna nominally is we can get about a megabit per watt out of this antenna for transmit performance. And we've done receive all the way up to about 55-60 megabits with this antenna. So This provided primary network access for all the people in the Biloxi area within about 30 miles of Biloxi for a whole week. And one of the key applications for this antenna, and we had an 802.11 hub that was set up in the school. This was one of the only structures that was remaining in this whole area. It was a school that had recently been built and served as the main command center for that region. And the primary application was FEMA disaster response forms, and that was a really amazing experience. There were two gentlemen from our team that were down at Wool Market for that week, and I was providing logistical support from West Chicago. But the opportunity represented by this type of system is pretty remarkable for pre-placing the assets or for rapidly getting the assets in place. The other nifty thing about this ground system, of course, it is inflatable and it has relies on an air pump to keep it inflated. But the entire ground system requires less than 1 kilowatt of power. So what we do is we travel with a small Honda generator turn on if required. Now this facility actually had power after a couple days, so we were able to use their shore power. But it doesn't take a whole lot of power and a whole lot of fuel to keep the system operational. I think that's it. Appreciate your attention and look forward to the discussions later on.